The cost of hardware parallelly is falling down. The understanding of hardware is falling down. At the same time, you have AI that is getting smarter and smarter as well. So it's becoming increasingly possible economically from a technology standpoint also to actually deploy these systems into the real world. And I think that's what makes this time very exciting and interesting for the technology as a whole.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Opto Sessions. Today, we're pleased to have Tejas Desai on the show, and he is a research analyst at GlobalX. GlobalX is a renowned asset manager managing an impressive portfolio of over $51 billion last time I looked in the AUM. How are you doing today, Tejas?
Pretty good. Good to be here.
Could you just quickly give us an overview of your role at GlobalX and who GlobalX is?
Absolutely, yeah. So again, my name is Tejas Desai. I am a research analyst at GlobalX ETFs, mostly focused on covering disruptive technology products for GlobalX. For those of you that don't know, GlobalX is an ETF issuer primarily based here in New York City, but we have operations all around the world. We have about $51 billion in assets around the world. And we're very well known for our thematic ETF suite. You know, we have an artificial intelligence ETF, a cloud computing ETF, robotics ETF. In fact, we take a lot of pride in being early in many of these macro disruptive trends and themes. To give you a quick example, in fact, we launched a social media ETF in 2011, even before Facebook went public. So this is what we're known for, and very excited to have this conversation here today.
Wow, so GlobalX has been around quite a long time.
Yeah, we were founded in 2008.
Okay.
And just celebrated our 15-year anniversary last year in August.
Nice. That's great. And are you calling from New York today?
Yes, I am in our New York City office. This is where our HQ is.
And is there a lot of offices around the world, are there?
We have a European operation. We have an office in London. We're also scaling our business in Australia and in Asia and also in Latin America.
Well, yeah, as you said, today we're going to talk about disruptive technology. As quite a lot to get through. We've got a lot of questions down as GlobalX offer a huge variety of different disruptive ETFs. So I thought we could start with robotics. It's quite topical. And I know you've talked about this a lot. So I thought we could just initially go through how the rise of smart machines is changing the role of human workers in factories.
Absolutely. That's a great question and an interesting topic to begin with. I think, broadly speaking, this is an interesting moment in history for robotics broadly. I think, on one hand, you have a ton of technological progress that makes automation possible, right? We've seen this digitization of the economy sort of play out for the past 3 or 4 decades now. We have a lot of, data collected. We have artificial intelligence sort of improving parallelly as well. But at the same time, the economics are also aligning very well for the increased use of, automation, broadly speaking, especially in developed markets. We have an ongoing labor shortage. We're looking to invest significantly to bring back manufacturing, back home within the Western Hemisphere. So all of that points towards an interesting inflection point for the robotics industry. And I think, overall, smart machines and robotics are going to be quite impactful. And one of the primary use cases of that is within factories or within manufacturing. Obviously, I think the promise there, or there is a lot of value in terms of relieving people increasingly from physically intensive tasks or, tasks or jobs that, essentially put human beings at risk within factory shop floors. But there's also the need for, better outcomes, right? More utilization, more products being produced, more precise products, better quality and things like that. So, that's sort of the drivers within that space. I think today where we are is what we're seeing is automation being used to, again, relieve human workers, within these various spaces. And we've had several, successful use cases and successes, in fact, within the space as well. Classic example is a company like Tesla, right? Significantly higher production rate, utilization rate per employee relative to some of the other automakers. I think eventually we'll move towards, an area of robotics where we could possibly have human workers working on a shop floor being elevated to a role where they, control a swarm of robots that actually run factories, right? So in that situation, I think the promise and the opportunity is pretty big, it's a great time to be within the space.
So the humans are maintain more of the personal sort of front end of the store. Meanwhile, the robots are controlling all the automation in the back end.
Absolutely, yes. One employee working on a shop floor with his hands and eyes and actually, performing and fitting things and, putting things together versus, one employee managing 10 robots that can pretty much do these, same job. I think the latter is a lot more valuable, right? And it's really our intelligence and our ability, to make decisions and to process information is really what unlocks value. So I think, that's where most of the value really is. And, that's where innovation is mostly going towards.
And am I right in saying that over time, robotics could reduce the cost of goods, in particular goods, I suppose, that are produced in factories because they are cheaper than humans to manage? Is it reducing the cost as long as there's competition in those markets? It should drive the price down?
100%. I think labor economics is one part of the equation there. And, that's certainly there are some advantages to be gained from that. But I also think quality of products could go up significantly when you have, machines that are working on building and designing these products. And again, human beings can effectively work for 6 hours or 8 hours in a go. Then you can run machines, 24/7 all the time. So utilization on these, lines would actually go up as well. So, and at the same time, I think, error rates could go down. Again, precision goods, precision systems, products that really need a lot of attention can be manufactured at scale. And I think it really positions us to make the most of this, wave of globalization that we're participating in, right? In the sense that, access to quality products will go up. At the same time, access to products and cost of actually producing these products, actually goes down over time, more and more consumers can have access to higher quality products across the board as well. So, it really fits well into this massive narrative or this endeavor as a society that we're on of industrializing, really making consumption simple on a long enough horizon.
What are the potential sort of risks or challenges associated with automation, possibly touching on the ethics, et cetera, that we might have to look at going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are many. Again, with any technology that's super early, you don't even know what problems could emerge, 5, 6, 7 years down the line as you go through that adoption cycle. And I think with automation and robotics, we're going to see something like that happen as well. But a few that, you can think about immediately is, number one is just general job displacement, right? I mean, currently, a large number of people are working within manufacturing as an industry. That's the, primary source of earning bread for a lot of folks, around the world. How do we make sure that training of, those people actually happens so that they can move into a position or a role where they work alongside, robotic systems, right? So I think that's one of the sort of potential risks and challenges in terms of the backlash or the reorientation of human labor. At the same time, I think there's also going to be some unique ethical considerations that eventually come up, right? But once we get to a point again of complete automation, and I don't think that is far away where you have robots running factories all by themselves, right? How do we decide again whether the quality of a product being produced is good enough, right? Can we take it out, right? Classic example is a food processing facility that is run 100% by robotic systems, right? Should we be okay consuming the food that, for example, comes out of it, or should we take the quality up a notch? So there's going to be several, I think, considerations around these subjects that will need to be sort of specified, evaluated, looked at. And then lastly, I think there's always, in the world that we're living in today, security concerns broadly, right? Automation is digitized, and as a result of that, these systems can be vulnerable and they can be hacked. In 2021, we had a massive sort of meat processing factory attack here in the United States. And that, again, is, we're not at 100% automation in that case, but, JBS Meats was basically held hostage for a very long time, and that could, disrupt the entire supply chain, take prices up and cause all sorts of problems. So, I think cybersecurity also is a massive sort of area of risk that will need to be addressed in the coming days as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about cybersecurity later on as well, but it's funny how all of these themes have some sort of interrelated in some ways. I had a question about the robotics theme and automation because it's not really anything new with a lot of robotics and automation on the surface. It's been talked about for a long time and there's been automation in factories, et cetera. What exactly is changing now that, you know, that everyone thinks is stepping up to another level and it's going to really sort of increase in value back to the consumers through efficiencies, et cetera, a lot over the next 5-10 years? What's changed?
Absolutely. I think many things have changed. You know, if you look at the history of robotics, you know, we've been very good at, you know, at hardware for a very long time. And, you know, essentially robotics is, you know, the combination of artificial intelligence, which is a brain on one hand, right, of the system, and the hardware components of it, right, which I like to say is the hands of system, right? And then you have the brain and the hands that have to go, you know, hand in hand or always be in sync to get optimum results, you know, as these robotic systems operate in the real world. So I think over the past, you know, several years, again, we've been very good at the hardware aspect of things. If you've, you know, looked at the demonstrations that have come off of, you know, Boston Dynamics or, you know, companies like even Honda that, you know, has been building humanoids for a very long time, you know, you can see that these products are mechanically, you know, quite solid. It's really the software aspect of things that took, you know, a very long time to be developed, right? And part of the reason there was artificial intelligence, up until a few years ago, was not as scalable. You know, it couldn't, again, be deployed on these machines that operate in very restricted, you know, environments or resources, right? For example, a robot has to be power efficient. You need processors that are power efficient, right? You need, again, putting a GPU system on a robot to actually, you know, make these decisions at lightning fast speed. You know, all of those technical considerations had to be balanced out. Right. I think currently, you know, artificial intelligence is at a very interesting point here, especially with these large language models. You know, we've clearly unlocked a new frontier of innovation in terms of capability. Right. And the best part about, you know, these models, again, is that they're also inherently distributable. Right. The AI that we were using 5 years ago basically was running in massive data centers, you know, was, you know, only accessible through a web page, again, you know, behind your Amazon, you know, webpage or your Netflix, you know, recommendation system and things like that, and took significant resources. And that is increasingly being democratized as well, right? So the cost of hardware parallelly is falling down. The understanding of hardware is falling down. At the same time, you have AI that is getting smarter and smarter as well. So it's becoming increasingly possible economically from a technology standpoint also to actually deploy these systems into the real world. And I think that's what makes, you know, this, this time very, exciting and interesting for the technology as a whole.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So the advent of AI basically unlocking the potential in robotics and various other disruptive themes. I mean, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I thought we could just quickly, I don't know how much you know about Tesla's Optimus robot. I mean, everyone's seen it on Twitter and everything, but I think he's made some wild predictions, such as they're going to be available in the homes in sort of 2026 to 2028 sort of time. What's your viewpoint on it?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, Elon Musk is known to be very ambitious. I think, you know, there is, we can't contest that at all. In another statement, he said he expects about 1 billion humanoids, you know, to be around, around worldwide by 2040, which I think is a, you know, lot reasonable timeline, very believable. You know, again, right, these things sort of, you know, happen very slowly. And then all of a sudden you see a massive spike in terms of adoption. Yeah, we've seen things happen with smartphones before, you know, same with automobiles, same with, you know, personal computers, things like that. I think, you know, if you think about it fundamentally and from first principles point of view, I think, look, Tesla is an interesting company. And I think, you know, they are in a position to really do this better than anybody else, right? I think they have, again, invested severely, although, you know, it's an automobile company, they've invested severely and significantly in, you know, in building chips, in building software, right? In making actually the automation systems and the robots that actually build cars. So what they have here is a very tightly vertically integrated company that is, you know, great at operating as a, you know, this hyper automated giant machine that happens to make electric vehicles, right? And the focus right now is, you know, again, minimizing the use of human labor on the shop floor and, you know, putting up, you know, robots actually to work and function in there. I think they could achieve that target, you know, very aggressively in the coming days where very specific functions, a multi-purpose robot could actually be seen replacing workers again on the factory shop floor. I think there's going to be some considerations that we know only once these elements or once again these robotic systems actually play in the field, right? The same way we've had to deal with unique challenges with self-driving vehicles, right? We expected to have self-driving vehicles in 2015 and before that in 2010, right? And then every at every milestone we realized that the 0.001% of error is really what takes large majority of time to actually fix. So I think, it's TBD. Overall, I do believe that us as consumers certainly have appetite for, buying a robot or owning a robotic system, that can be used for our domestic use cases, can be used by, small business owners, that can be used for, in public use cases, right? Right from policing to doing other things. I think there is certainly some appetite and, people would actually, pay for a system that reasonably does, specific tasks very well. So the idea perfectly, I think, is executable. I think on the timelines, I wouldn't be as, hold very high expectations.
Yeah. but in terms of the potential, at least from what Elon's been saying, he believes it could be a lot bigger than even the cars, the electric cars, the market size of the robots.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I think if you look at a car itself, it's a complex piece of machinery again, that's in a way is dumb, right? And then now you have a with a robot, a machinery that's equally complex in design, but has a degree of intelligence and can actually free you up. And I think, again, productivity is invaluable, right? And if you free up human beings to do more, the price that you would be willing to pay for that particular object goes significantly higher. So with that, dynamics, I do think that it could end up becoming a much bigger market.
Exciting times. And if you were to, if you could pick a few sub themes from robotics that you think might show the most promise over the next couple of years, are any that stand out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the impact of robotics in various different sectors is quite promising. I think manufacturing is an obvious use case. Industrial robots are ready for prime time deployment. The risk of a robot actually making a mistake, going bad, is kind of minimal within manufacturing. I think that's where you will see a lot of applications emerge. Secondly, I also believe that healthcare robotics is ready for prime time. Ready for
surgery
prime time.
And stuff.
Absolutely, robotic assisted surgeries, I think, is going to be a massive market in the coming days. Intuitive Surgical, which is the category leading company within this space, has been doing phenomenal work. But the cost of these robotic systems again remains, still high. That needs to go down. There are many markets around the world where access to a physician is, still a massive challenge. And I think robotics can really change the picture there. But even in markets like the United States, right, where you have great talent also, I think, surgeons increasingly will prefer robotic systems just because of the precision it can deliver, the data-driven approach that it can, deliver as a whole as well. And lastly, I think, services-based robotics is something that, I think a lot of people are sleeping on as a whole, right? But I think, the use of robots within restaurants, drive-throughs, the fast food sort of model, shopping malls, I think there is a massive opportunity there, which is only, again, will be possible because now we have these increasingly smart generative AI systems or large language models that can communicate with human beings directly, right? So I think that's another area that could really surprise in the coming days.
So let's segue into AI, which is obviously a hot topic, been a hot topic for a while. How will AI disrupt some of these traditional industries like finance? You sort of touched on healthcare there, but are there other areas that it could disrupt in healthcare? Automotive, retail. If we could just go through a few examples, maybe some that people might not have thought of, be interesting to touch on that.
Absolutely. I think, this is the golden moment for artificial intelligence. ChatGPT has been around for about, 14, 15 months already and feels much longer than that. So all of this is still really fresh. I think a lot of projects within artificial intelligence that were shelved for a very long time because we didn't really have a massive change of status quo within AI. We're now back on the roster. I think a lot of investments will go into these projects. And I think there are some interesting use cases across the board and some very unique, again, value propositions. But if you look at it, right, at the core of it, what we're doing with, generative AI or artificial intelligence is, to a certain degree, we are commoditizing intelligence, right? Things that we as human beings would have to do. We can possibly get AI agents to automate those processes for us or do those things for us, right? And I think currently, if you look at areas such as, just if you consider knowledge work broadly, right, professional services or the work that you and I do, a large amount of it can be automated, again, by using, generative AI systems, right from, writing email, composing drafts, writing memos, to, basic project management services, right, status updates, reporting to things. I think 20-25% of all of our time, on a daily basis actually go, within this these functions, and that can be disrupted. I work in financial services, classic example again. We write a ton of research all the time. We're trying to get up to speed on specific topics, specific markets, technologies and trends. Having AI systems really summarize or, bring together things that, we're looking for, in a rapid, time frame would be super effective as well. At the same time, for example, a classic use case that we could derive a lot of value from is putting together presentations, right? Put together a presentation that explains to financial advisors how the GPU compute landscape is going to change because of artificial intelligence, right? All of the time and the resources that would typically go into this, can be streamlined. At the same, I think there are, very similar applications and parallels there, within technology, within, healthcare. Within technology, I think code generation, again, writing software, there is so much redundant software being written from scratch within the technology industry today. A large part of that, could be automated. And I think there are, significant productivity gains to be harnessed within that space. Within healthcare, it's, maintaining patient records, sending messages, again, coming up with a comprehensive diagnosis report so that, it saves time for doctors. So the applications are really, broad and yeah. Powerful. That's what I think.
Yeah, really vast. So I think the big question on everyone's mind, though, is which one of these sectors that are using AI is going to benefit the most? Or in terms of sort of performance, because there's obviously the semiconductors, more the picks and shovels approach, who've already benefited massively from this trend. But you could perceive that is going to continue, and that it, with demand increasing over time, is it going to? I don't know how long it's going to continue for, but it could be them that is the big winners. Absolutely necessary for people that are using AI. You've got the blue chips, the developing the language models, but potentially over time they become a bit commoditized. Or you've got the companies such as robotics companies that use AI software to help increase output of the robots, or is it going to be something else entirely? If you had to sort of put your finger down somewhere, where do you think, which companies are going to benefit the most from this big trend?
Absolutely. And I think, this is so vast and broad, and it's a moment of mass disruption that it's really, difficult to pick individual winners, company A versus company B. So the way we look at it is we think that, specifically this will play out in three phases, right? Where in phase one, you have, artificial intelligence again needs, specialized compute, needs specialized sort of semiconductor ability to actually play out. So in phase one, which we are in right now, we think, companies that supply the wares, right from the GPUs that are needed to actually run these models to the ancillary components that go alongside a GPU, to actually build the data center capacity or build the clusters that are needed to train, deploy, and again, keep these models running, right? So NVIDIA, for example, is a classic winner of that opportunity. If you look at it, every year, almost $250 billion, roughly in that range worth of chips go into data centers. NVIDIA up until last year had a very tiny, share of this spending. I think, that will go up significantly, but at the same time, you will have, specialized again, you know, memory components that go alongside, right? Storage components that will, again, need to be rewired, you know, networking components that need to be supplied. So the whole compute puzzle, you know, will be restructured. And I think that's going to be phase one. And that could last for a couple of years here, you know, minimum, but a lot more than that, depending upon how widespread these models, you know, really go, right? And I think the second stage of this entire revolution is when we think the middleware sort of benefits, right? You have your cloud infrastructure companies. Now, once we have, again, the compute is ready, so how do we make sure that your traditional enterprises have access to these models, right? And they will naturally buy these models from your Microsoft Azure, your Amazon AWS, or a Google Cloud platform. At the same time, we expect a large number of data infrastructure companies to benefit within this cycle as well. So right from your database providers to the companies that actually enable the pipeline for data to be cleaned, processed, really be prepared to train these models, right? And then, you know, once those two phases are possible, we think in the third phase, you would have, new interfaces or new experiences really coming up and capturing a large amount of the value, right? And I think companies within this space is really a TBD. It's really hard to, point out what companies would appear. But again, you could have your incumbents like your booking.coms and the Priceline of the world coming up and building a whole new, travel booking experience. Or you could have a startup that really, tries to capture that space with, again, giving you automated trips, and things like that. So not only within travel, but that expands to healthcare, that expands to financial services, project management, productivity, so on and so forth. So certainly an exciting time and a moment of mass disruption for the technology industry.
Will NVIDIA be able to maintain its competitive advantage against other semiconductor companies? Will it be able to maintain its moat given, how big this market is now? Any market that gets that successful is obviously increasing competition because there's lots of money to be made. You've got AMD, Apple, and other people in the space. Will they slowly start shaving off market share from NVIDIA, or do you think NVIDIA will be able to maintain its competitive advantage and stay one step ahead?
That's a good question. I think NVIDIA defends, NVIDIA should be comfortably able to defend its positioning in the market. But at the same time, we also do expect a chip opportunity to arise outside of NVIDIA that a lot of other companies can go after. So, currently, if you look at what NVIDIA really dominates is it dominates the AI, the premium model training sort of market, right? Where, the best of breed models are being trained on the best chips that NVIDIA can provide that really expands the compute capacity that these companies need to train these models. And I think there's going to be a market to, again, train these foundational models to the best of capacity, see how much information we can put in these models, see what level of intelligence can we really get out of there. At the same time, again, NVIDIA has been a first mover within the space. It can defend, it'll naturally, carry that. At the same time, NVIDIA has the CUDA architecture that it sells also, right, which really, locks its chips in. And a lot of developers have familiarity with that middleware layer that NVIDIA sells that allows developers, again, to harness the most efficiency out of the chips that NVIDIA sells. So the combination of both there is really great and has worked out great for NVIDIA. But I think outside of that, there's going to be a market that develops. Again, once we have these models ready, there's going to be an inference market to actually run these models on a daily basis for routine use cases. And I think AMD, Intel can really, try to capture some of that. And outside of the data center, again, there's going to be a massive market for these chips to run these models locally, right? Be it IoT systems, be it running these models on mobile devices, or running these models, again, on cars and vehicles, on robotic systems. And I think there you would need to keep your costs of compute low, the costs of these chips pretty low. And I think that's a mass market opportunity that companies like Marvell or even Qualcomm or many other could actually go after as it takes shape.
Yeah, big times ahead still for many of these semiconductor companies. And I had a question about another area that AI is impacting, which is software development. So it hasn't quite got there yet, but what we're seeing at the moment is basically these language models are augmenting developers' skills to make them better at their job. But you can see how in a year's time, they'll be so advanced that one developer might be able to create a whole software company, similar to other companies that exist today that have taken many, many years of software development to create. Now, my question was, so there's a lot of these companies in many different verticals, typically software as a service companies, let's say. Do you think as software gets easier to create, that there'll be a real possibility of competition with these larger companies, which would therefore drive down the price? Because whenever there's increasing competition, there's tends to be a price war, unless, you know, the market, the incumbents have some way to maintain that. So that was my question. I don't know what your thoughts were on it.
No, absolutely. I think we've seen a fair amount of it, happened within the past 5 or 7 years, as, you know, the cost of capital went historically super down. So you had, you know, VC dollars easily available relatively. And then that, you know, led to a lot of competition, right? For every CRM company that was out there, there were 5 others, you know, trying to capture that market. And I think what allowed some of the incumbents to defend their share of positioning during that time was, number one, access to unique data, right? Access to customer data. It's really the position that they're in. Again, clients aren't really, you know, always excited about moving all of their files, moving all of their information. And also, again, extended to that is the distribution that they really have, right? The sales force that they have, or the market reputation, the brand positioning that they have. So I think, and lastly, on that note, I would say, the advantages that startups would receive from, having the cost of development actually go down because of these models, right? The incumbents also have, that advantage. So, I don't think it's, the development capability that would really make or break many of these companies. Okay. I think, the axis of differentiation will really shift again to what kind of data assets do you have access to? What kind of relationships do you have? And what kind of distribution networks, do you really have going on? And again, on that note, I think we would also see, I think it's but natural to have a lot of upstarts coming up within the next, 5 or so years. You would also see heightened M&A environment where, many of these large companies that are sitting on, massive, cash balances, cash reserves, actually go out and buy the best of breed solution providers that are out.
And let's move on to cybersecurity now. It's another really hot topic. And how big is the opportunity in cybersecurity? Because a lot of people probably know, everyone knows about cybersecurity, and obviously it's becoming more and more conscious of it because more of this is going on. People see it in the news, companies being held ransom and losing a lot of money from being, not being able to use their systems and things like this. And this is becoming an increasing occurrence. How big is the opportunity in cyber, and is it increasing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, cybersecurity is, frankly, one of the most exciting areas within technology right now. Historically, it has been underserviced. If you look at the total cyber spending, it adds up to about, $200 billion or so, roughly in that range. And it has been growing about, 10-15% for the last, 5 years or so. Has been growing much faster than the broader technology industry or broader IT industry. But, it's still not enough. And, it's one of those areas where you, things change so fast, and you really have to be super innovative because, hackers again, and bad actors, continue to get better with time as well. The total IT spending, that the global economy sort of spends on adds up to, close to $5 trillion. And to think about it, to secure all this, we're spending only, $200 billion, to actually, secure all this seems very minuscule. So I think cybersecurity spending will continue to go, higher and higher. Again, it's also a function of how fast and how aggressively we digitize the global economy, right? Up until today, it was mostly information that you were securing. It was mostly communications that you were securing. Now you have to actually secure, factories and, real life offline, systems and critical systems, right from the power electric grid, to logistics networks and again, healthcare facilities. So that really expands the scope, for cybersecurity. And I think as a result of that, spending will really grow in the coming days. One last point I'd make here is that, I think government spending is really a wild card, right? The government has historically been underinvested within cybersecurity, or even has invested only up until securing its infrastructure. But I think the question within the past 5 years or so has moved past that towards broad citizen safety, right? How do you make sure that again, local governments or local systems or the entire apparatus of a country is really secure? And I think because of that, the government will have to open up its wallets and spend aggressively as well. So that really compounds the market that cybersecurity addresses.
And I suppose the more successful AI is and automation, the more important cyber is, as well as everything becomes online. Could we just touch on AI and how that might be used in cyber as well? Because I assume, I don't know enough about the intricacies of it, that some of the best, the leading companies are using AI to tackle cyber threats with their software. Is that right? And yeah, what are your thoughts on how that's going to impact it?
Absolutely. I think, it certainly expands the scope for attacks. And I think it also complicates the broader landscape because, now you don't just have human hackers that are trying to exploit vulnerabilities in your systems, but you also have a human hacker equipped with a very smart AI agent that can also work alongside and try to do the same job. At the same time, again, I think it also democratizes access to these really powerful agents for cyber professionals as well, right? To build defenses, to also run many of these diagnostics, to also try and understand in what way their own networks are vulnerable. So, I think it's a bit of both. Again, the cyber industry has leaned very heavily on artificial intelligence to deliver, solutions throughout, for the past several years now. Be it in, threat detection, understanding, endpoint security, the health of devices, and there's tremendous amounts of data that is being generated by these, devices, by systems that we use on a routine basis, which really allows artificial intelligence to shine. So I think it's going to be a very exciting and hot area for a large number of companies to innovate on in the coming days.
Well, thanks so much, Tejas, for the chat today. It's great to go through so many different things that you basically offer at GlobalX as well. So I thought we could just touch on any relevant ETFs at GlobalX that might cross over with these themes we've talked about today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Once again, thank you for having me. And then I think, again, we offer products here at GlobalX that are quite broad across the lineup. Artificial intelligence, we have two specific ETFs that are designed to capture the opportunity within the AI space. One of the ETFs that we have is Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, goes by the ticker AIQ. And what we're doing with that particular ETF is we're trying to identify the developers of AI, the companies that are selling AI as service solutions, but also the companies that supply the picks and shovels, the semiconductors for the AI revolution to actually play out. Then outside of that, I think two of my other favorite ETFs is the cybersecurity ETF that we have, goes by the ticker BUG, B-U-G. Again, it captures some of the largest cybersecurity pure plays that are out there that derive at least 50% of their revenues from cybersecurity operations. So you get very concentrated exposure to the cyber opportunity. And then lastly, we also have a cloud computing ETF, goes by the ticker CLOU. And I think the cloud computing space as a whole could really benefit from the disruption that is happening within the artificial intelligence space as well. So again, outside of that, we have close to 35 other thematic strategies at GlobalX, many of which are very well positioned in this given environment right now.
That's great. Thanks, Tejas. Is there anything else you'd like to leave the audience with it? Where can they go for research or things like this?
Yeah, absolutely. Every year, actually, we do publish a comprehensive research report in partnership with the Wall Street Journal. It's called Charting Disruption. We really work with, we put together our best ideas, but we also work with outside experts to lay out the strongest themes and trends that we see on the horizon. It can be found at www.chartingdisruption.com. A very fascinating report. Just as a nugget there, last time we actually, one of our research analysts here, director of research, Pedro Palandrani, actually went in and drove in a self-driving truck offered by Kodiak Robotics. So some fascinating content there. We also have a few docuseries that's part of this project. Please check it out. And feel free to reach out to us on social media if you have any questions.
Thanks so much. Cheers. And have a good day. I hope we get a chance to catch up again in the future on this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.